This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yeswu Heben, coming up this hour on Africa News Tonight.
The defenders of what is good and right are being outflanked in too many countries by race-baiting bigots who seek to gain or retain power by wielding prejudice and deceit at the expense of those most vulnerable and ultimately even those who support them initially.
That's Ziad Rad Al Hussein, the UN High Commissioner for Human Rights, speaking today at the UN High Level Meeting on Migrants and Refugees in New York. Details coming up.
Also, demonstrators in the DRC say President Joseph Kabila must step down when his term ends in December. And 21 people across Zimbabwe have been arrested for disorderly conduct, including members of the opposition movement for democratic change.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Our top story this hour, the Democratic Republic of Congo, a protest against the president today descended into violence. The interior minister told reporters that 17 people were killed, 3 policemen and 14 civilians. The demonstrators say President Joseph Kabila must step down when his term ends in December. William Clowes has the latest from Kinshasa.
The singing quickly devolved into angry chanting. Kabila must go, the protesters yelled. People built barricades to block the roads and burn tires of vehicles in the pro-opposition neighborhood of Limite. By 7:30 a.m., police were sporadically firing tear gas grenades. This man told VOA that, "We see that all the Congolese are here to reclaim the rule of law. I am a young Congolese and we need a change. We need elections within the constitutional time frame. We will chase Kabila from the country by force." Several thousand opposition supporters were gathering in Limite and at other points around Kinshasa. The plan was to march around the city before a delegation of 50 opposition leaders delivered a petition to the Electoral Commission. The Kinshasa governor had authorized the plan. Instead, the situation quickly became tense and chaotic. Opposition leaders say that police intimidated their supporters, dispersing them as they gathered and blocking their approach to the central meeting place. At midday, riot police and soldiers were stationed on the road leading to that meeting place near the Parliament building. The OA saw security forces stopping at least 5 people who looked to be foreign observers and loading them into the back of vehicles. An opposition leader told VOA by phone that he and others were penned in one of their party headquarters and unable to leave. A Congolese government spokesman told AFP News that the government decided to cancel the demonstration after supporters of veteran opposition leader Etienne Tshisekedi murdered 2 policemen in Limite. George Kapiamba, the president of the Congolese Association for Access to Justice, told VOA that his team has seen the bodies of 7 people who witnesses said were killed by live rounds fired by the security forces. Monday marks the day the DRC's electoral process should have kicked off ahead of November polls, but the Electoral Commission now says that the poll should be pushed off until 2018. It says that time is needed to compile a new voter list. The leaders of the opposition coalition, known as Le Rassemblement, or the Assembly, say President Kabila is deliberately delaying polls to give him more time to change the constitution so that he can run for a third term. Kabila has not spoken publicly on the subject, though some of his supporters have called for a referendum to remove term limits. Across town, behind closed doors, the government and a smaller faction of the opposition are thrashing out an agreement over election dates. Participants in that dialogue have raised the possibility of an interim power-sharing government once Kabila's mandate expires in December, but have given no additional details. The Rassemblement has dismissed this dialogue as a sham and boycotted it. William Clowes for VOA News, Kinshasa.
As the new UN General Assembly session begins in New York, A high-level meeting is being held today on the large movements of migrants and refugees. Among those who addressed the meeting was Ambassador William Lacey Swing, Director General of the International Organization for Migration. The IOM has just been made a part of the UN.
Migration has become a megatrend of our century. We live in a world on the move. There have never been so many people in movement. Unprecedented human mobility. 1 billion of our 7 billion world are migrants. One in every seven of us a migrant. And were the 244 million international migrants to constitute themselves as a country, they would have a population slightly smaller than Indonesia's and slightly larger than Brazil's. They would have a gross domestic product roughly that of a small to medium-sized European country, and far exceed all foreign aid.
Swing said there are many factors driving migration, including disasters, conflicts, economic problems, environmental degradation, and climate change.
So we're facing also a series that I have not seen in my lifetime of unprecedented, simultaneous, complex, and protracted crises and humanitarian emergencies in an arc of instability that stretches from the western bulge of Africa to the Himalayas. Worse still, there is little prospect that I see to resolve any of these crises in the short to medium term. Widespread, growing anti-migrant sentiment and policies have led to the cruel irony that those fleeing terrorism and fleeing armed conflict are themselves now accused of terrorism and criminality in the public mind of many. Besides the challenges of disasters, we face the demographic challenge of a global north in demographic deficit and a global south with a turgid rate of job creation facing demographic surplus. So our thesis is that migration is inevitable in this century owing to the drivers that I mentioned, necessary if our economies and societies are to flourish, and highly desirable if we have responsible and humane migration policies.
Swing called on UN members to change the current toxic narrative on migration and learn to manage ethnic, cultural, social, and religious diversity.
Migration is not so much an issue to be resolved or a problem to be solved. It is a human reality that together we all have to manage, and to do that, we have to be both responsible and humane. This can be a defining moment for human mobility, beginning with this summit.
Following the head of the International Organization for Migration was Zayed Raad Al-Hussein, the UN High Commissioner for Human Rights.
This should not be a comfortable summit. This summit cannot be reduced to speeches and feel-good interviews, a dash of self-congratulation, and we move on. When millions of people see freedom's invitation only through the flapping canvas of a tent, when they carry their children and their possessions on their backs, walking hundreds, perhaps even thousands of miles, when they and their families risk drowning and are kept cramped in appalling detention centers, and once released, risk abuse by racists and xenophobes. There is no cause for comfort here. The bitter truth is this summit was called because we have been largely failing the long-suffering people of Syria and not ending the war in its infancy, failing others in now chronic conflict zones for the same reason, failing millions of migrants who deserve far more than lives marked by cradle to grave indignity and desperation.
He said the defenders of what's good and right are being outflanked by race-baiting bigots.
An epidemic of amnesia is at the heart of this moral collapse in some quarters. Many seem to have forgotten the two world wars. What happens when fear and anger are stoked by half-truths and outright lies? A density of hatred builds up, the pin is pulled, the timer released, and humanity's rendezvous with the demon of world history beckons again. The bigots and deceivers in opposing greater responsibility sharing promote rupture. Some of them may well be in this hall this morning. If you are here, we say to you, we will continue to name you publicly. You may soon walk away from this hall, but not from the broader judgment of we the people, all the world's people, not from us.
That was Zayed Raad Al Hussein, the UN High Commissioner for Human Rights. He spoke today at the UN high-level meeting on migrants and refugees in New York.
Seventy years after they were introduced, antibiotics continue to be life-saving medicines for hundreds of millions of people with infections such as gonorrhea, pneumonia, and staph worldwide. However, the misuse and overuse of antibiotics and other antimicrobials is causing a severe health crisis. That's because strains of bacteria have become resistant to drugs. This week, a high-level meeting of the United Nations General Assembly will address the issue. VOA's Adam Phillips spoke with Ramanan Lakshminarayan of the Center for Disease Dynamics, Economics, and Policy in Washington, D.C.
People are prescribing antibiotics both appropriately and inappropriately. And in many places, people don't even need a prescription to go get an antibiotic. Across South Asia and Sub-Saharan Africa, you can pretty much go to a pharmacy and tell them that you have a stomach bug or you might have a respiratory infection, and they will just give you an antibiotic. This leads to massive overuse of antibiotics, particularly because, you know, many of these don't really need antibiotics in the first place, or they might be caused by viral infections, and viral infections don't need antibiotics.
So what is the consequence of this?
Drug resistance is just Darwinian natural selection. What that means is that we wipe out the population that is sensitive to the antibiotic, and we give an advantage to the bacteria that are resistant. So it should come as no surprise that sometimes when we have an infection, that infection is caused by bacteria that are resistant to antibiotics, and therefore the antibiotics don't work.
So paint a picture for me about what will happen if this inappropriate or over-prescription of antibiotics is not checked.
I think we already have a situation where many people are dying of bacterial infections that are untreatable. They might not know it because the death certificate does not say died of a drug-resistant infection. But if anyone that you know died of multi-organ failure because of an infection in a hospital, and I certainly know many, these are folks who basically acquired an infection in a hospital, an infection that was not treatable, and therefore they died. The thing to keep in mind is that drug resistance that is generated in any single country because of antibiotic use can spread to every other country. We had one such bug called NDM1 that first originated in India, and now this bug is in over 120 countries around the world. All that I can say is if we don't have new antibiotics and we continue to abuse the existing antibiotics, we are in serious trouble.
I know that the UN General Assembly is about to convene. What is it that you are recommending to them that they do?
We're looking for three things to happen. One is for there to be clear targets for reduction of inappropriate antibiotic use. The second thing is to have an accountability framework or a high-level coordinating mechanism composed of UN agencies, such as WHO, the World Bank, and many others, to make sure that these targets are met and that countries are taking them seriously. The third thing we'd like to see is sufficient financing to make sure that all countries have the ability to deal with drug resistance and to reduce antibiotic use.
What about the grassroots aspect, though? I mean, when you're on the level of the village and the local pharmacy guy who also sells soda gives you antibiotics, how are we going to get him to stop dispensing these irresponsibly?
You know, that's a great question. Right now, we do hand out antibiotics as if they were, you know, cubes of sugar quite cheaply as well. But the same sort of transformation that changed people's attitudes and understanding of tobacco, for instance, as something that causes cancer that's the level of behavioral change we need for antibiotics as well. I would really think that we need a global awareness campaign where in 5 or 10 years from now, every little child who's 5 years old knows that antibiotics are not to be messed around with, that they work only for bacterial infections, and that they should only be given under the guidance of a medical practitioner. We can't just tweak around the edges to solve this massive problem.
That was Ramanan Lakshmi Narayan of the Center for Disease Dynamics, Economics, and Policy in Washington, D.C. He spoke with VOA's Adam Phillips.
Zimbabwe police say they did not use bullets to quell demonstrations scheduled for last weekend to protest the failing economy and to call for electoral reforms. The protests were called by a coalition of opposition groups known as the National Electoral Reform Agenda. The French press agency quotes police as saying 21 people across the country were arrested for disorderly conduct. Authorities say that included members of the opposition movement for democratic change, who they accused of encouraging violence. Activists, on the other hand, said police fired on small groups of protesters outside Harare and arrested 100 people.
You're listening to African News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15, 580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
I'm Yais Wuhib, 22 past the hour. Here's a recap of our top stories. The large movements of migrants and refugees is the main focus of discussion as the UN General Assembly session begins in New York. And demonstrators in the DRC say President Joseph Kabila must step down when his term ends in December. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
A World Bank report says 65 million people, or 1% of the world's population, are forcibly displaced. Most of them live in developing countries, including South Sudan. The report says low to middle income countries host nearly 90% of refugees and almost all of the world's internally displaced people. Reporter Ian Bior has more on the story.
Xavier De Victor, an advisor on the Tragedy, Conflict, and Violence Group at the World Bank, says the same 10 conflicts in the last two decades have produced most of the world's refugee and migrant populations.
You're talking about Afghanistan, who has been, you know, in a situation of conflict or deep instability since 1979. You're talking about Somalia, who's been also in a in difficult situation since 1991, 1993. You're talking about Sudan and South Sudan, where there's been, you know, on and off violence for several decades.
The good news for host countries, according to De Victor, is that refugees typically do not have a large social or economic impact on the national level in their host countries because they represent only a fraction of the total population. In most cases, refugees account for less than 1% of the host country's population. Still, De Victor says, the large movement of people this past year has fueled xenophobic reactions, which can lead to prejudice and hostility at minority groups from residents. He says while there is little impact on the national level, local communities typically have to learn to adjust to an influx of refugees.
The impact in the regions where these people live can obviously be much larger. And this can have positive elements as well as negative elements, right? So when you have a large number of additional people, it creates additional demand, which in itself can generate more jobs. But at the same time, obviously, you have more people who can take these jobs. So the net effect is a gain for some people in the hosting community and a loss for others.
About 15 countries have consistently hosted the majority of refugees. Syria's neighbors, Turkey, Lebanon, and Jordan, hosted 27% of the world's refugee population, while Pakistan and Iran, both of which are neighbors to Afghanistan, hosted 16%. Refugees from South Sudan and Somalia make up 7% of the world's forcibly displaced population, and most live in Ethiopia and Kenya. De Victor says that although there has been a surge of displaced individuals in recent months, it is important for officials to understand that displacement happens gradually and typically takes years before it becomes a crisis.
You know, forced displacement does not rarely happens overnight. Forced displacement is a dynamic phenomenon that takes several years to reach its peak. And in the report, we find that it takes about 4 years from the first forced displacement, from the first time people flee conflict and violence, to the point that their numbers reach its peak.
De Victor says both government and aid agency officials can build schools and clinics and also come up with plans to ensure that internally displaced persons have access to basic services in host countries. 94% of the forcibly displaced live in camps, and about half of all refugees have been living in exile for less than 4 years. De Victor gives host countries a heads up.
That means that for host countries, there's probably some time to prepare to make some contingency plans and to be ready to host these people and to minimize the shock on host communities.
The World Bank says the forced displacement crisis needs a global and comprehensive response, one that ensures that refugees and IDPs are not dependent on aid for extended periods of time and helps refugees integrate into society. The bank says economic integration, such as skills and language training, could help people who are forcibly displaced enter the labor force of a host country and begin to provide for themselves and their families. For VOA News, I'm Ian Bior in Washington.
Here in the U.S., a man sought by police in connection with bombings in New York and New Jersey on Saturday is in custody following what has been described as a shootout with police. Law enforcement officials said Ahmad Rahami, 28, was detained in Linden, New Jersey, late this morning. CNN showed video of a man it said was Rahami, conscious and on a stretcher with what appeared to be a bloodied right shoulder, being loaded into an ambulance. Authorities later said he was undergoing surgery for a leg injury. Two police officers and Rahami sustained non-life-threatening injuries in the shootout. Police were searching for anyone linked to four explosives-related incidents in the last 3 days, including a blast Saturday night that injured 29 people in Manhattan's Chelsea neighborhood. New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio said Rahami is the sole person believed to be involved in the New Jersey and New York explosions.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Jonah Cummings, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Tuesday on Health Chat, join host Lenore Modou discussing the importance of breastfeeding. It's not only the cornerstone for a child's healthy development, but also the foundation of a country's development. For your questions, email us at healthchat@voanews.com. You can also reach us by phone to leave a message or to participate in the program. We will call you back. Dial the international code for the United States, then dial 202-205-9942. The country code is 1. Dial 45 after you hear the station ID. For listeners to call during the show, our telephone number is 202-619-3111. Health Chat this Tuesday at 1730 UTC. Right here on VOA Africa.
Next on Straight Talk Africa, the 71st United Nations General Assembly is underway in New York, including a first-of-its-kind summit of heads of state and government to address large movements of refugees and migrants with the aim of bringing countries together behind a more humane and coordinated approach. We'll discuss that and other issues next, right here on Straight Talk Africa at 18:30 UTC.